Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, Pod Shots.
Very well. You are free. But I warn you, if you make any further inquiries, or if you say a single word to anyone about what you have seen, there will be the most dire consequences for you and your family.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Podshots. I am your host, Eric Williams. For this episode, we are discussing the 1999 film Eyes Wide Shut. Written by Stanley Kubrick and Frederick Raphael, the film was based on the book or play, I guess, written by Arthur Schnitzler and was the final directing effort by Stanley Kubrick. The film stars Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. And here to discuss the film with me is returning guest, Mr. Benjamin Teed.
It's good to be here.
Before getting into our... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you always give me the ones like these really cerebral ones, you know, like we did a couple of David Lynch films.
Yeah, we've done Mulholland Drive. We've done Donnie Darko.
Didn't we do Blue Velvet?
We did Blue Velvet, yes.
Yeah, and like I'm sitting here going, am I like typecasted into these? I feel like it's like these are really like, and then you give me probably the hardest one I think I've had to do yet.
Oh yeah, yeah, we'll get into that specifically here in just a bit. I do need to get you out of the groove. I tend to do that with people. Some of my other friends, we only talk about westerns. And he says, yeah. You know, I like a lot more movies than just westerns.
No, but I love Kubrick, though, so it's totally fine.
So there we go.
Like, oh, man, of all the Kubrick to choose.
That's true. So before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that this podcast is brought to you by the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there. So before we get into this, the exploration of this film, what are you drinking? What do you have drink roll call wise for me?
Drink roll call, I am all out of my stuff in the fridge, or am I?
He claims, yes.
I claim. But Samantha has a few of her Angry Orchards left over, and actually, of all the ciders that are available in this area, I think I like Angry Orchard the best.
Well, there you are.
She picked up the green apple flavor, so it is good for the summer, because I'm usually Mr., you know, thick, dark beer, you know?
Sure.
Tons of alcohol content and all that. I taste all that alcohol in there. But tonight, it's just a nice, tasty, it tastes like apple juice, like a bitey apple juice.
I was going to say, it's like drinking like apple pucker, or what?
Yeah.
It's less
sour. It is a green apple, but it's still not bad.
Sure. Since this is a film about high society, I tried to raise the stakes for me a little bit. So I'm having a vodka martini.
You're drinking it through your Venetian mask.
How cool would that be?
You're not allowed to lift it up and drink it. You have to drink it through the mouth slit.
Yeah, I got a little straw, but I'm drinking it. So I'm having a vodka martini. It's got it's a dry martini, so it does have vermouth, but it was swirled around and dumped out for those that don't know that. And normally I would have a few green olives in there, which would make Zach Crucy happy. But I do not have the green olives for the listening pleasure of Ben and our audience. Didn't figure me chewing on the olives would be so good. So
at least you're wearing your big hooded cloak. And...
I am. I'm plenty warm with my cloak. It is, you know, it is in the triple digits earlier today, so it's a warm one out there.
Forgot to ask me the password before we got on. And
stuff. Yes, that's true. Okay, so with that, we're ready to begin our discussion on Eyes Wide Shut.
I have seen one or two things in my life, but never, never anything like this.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break in two?
I didn't think so.
You ever tried with all your heart and soul to get your lover back to you?
I don't hope so.
You ever pray with all your heart
bad thing. Maybe did a bad, bad thing.
And the IMDb plot synopsis is as follows. Sexual jolts disrupts Manhattan's physician Bill Hartford's equilibrium. At an elegant Christmas party, two models hit on him. He watches a Lothario try to pick up his tipsy wife. He aids a woman sprawled naked in a bathroom after an overdose. That night, his wife reveals sexual fantasies with a stranger. A dead patient's daughter throws herself at him. As he walks brooding, six teenage boys hurl homophobic insults at him. A streetwalker takes him to her flat. He interrupts men having a sex party with a girl barely in her teens. His odyssey, which next takes him into a world of wealthy sex play at a masked ball of hedonism, threatens his life, his self-respect, and his marriage. So, that being said, Ben, what, give me
the
some,
tip of the iceberg.
Just the tip, keeping it classy. What's your history with Kubrick in general?
I've only seen, 2001 Space Odyssey, The Shining, and most, if not all, of Doctor Strange. It's been a few years since I've seen Doctor Strange.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of anything, if I've missed anything else. I guess I haven't.
Clockwork Orange?
No.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah, surprisingly. For me, I was kind of under the impression that I at least had seen most of them. But then when I looked, like, I've seen Eyes Wide Shut now, I've seen The Shining, I've seen A Clockwork Orange and 2001, but I've never seen Full Metal Jacket or Barry Lyndon.
Oh, yes, Full Metal Jacket I own, yeah, I love that one too. Barry Lyndon was another one, Paths of Glory,
right?
Another one I haven't seen. Lolita.
I shockingly have not seen Spartacus. Which I'm surprised by. And
I've seen Spartacus.
And I haven't seen The Killing either. So, those are most of his. He's also done Killer's Kiss and, Fear and Desire. And I have not seen those either.
I plan to see all of them someday too, especially since, one of my favorite, in college, one of my favorite filmmakers that I kind of started watching his stuff and discovered mostly because of his work with the Batman movies, Christopher Nolan.
Sure.
He said, a lot, one of his biggest influences, and you can kind of tell in his work in Inception and stuff like that, that his inspiration is Kubrick,
right?
As well,
yeah. So that's our brief history with the film. This is a first watch for both of us. This film,
yes.
I feel like this is may have been a first watch, but this is one that maybe on the fourth or fifth watch for me, I'll finally get a full sense of it.
Yeah. Actually, I gotta be honest, I think I might have seen a large portion of this film when I was very young, not very young, I guess, not so young, in like 90, well, I guess it came out in 99, so I guess it would have been like 2000 or something, when, I probably saw it on like HBO or something.
Oh, really?
Like late at night at my parents or something. You know, it was one of those movies where you got Skinamax for a weekend or something.
Sure.
And like, they're showing this film, and you're like, what the heck is this? And the first shot of the film, Nicole Kidman taking off the dress, you know? So I'm sitting there going, all right, I'll watch this as a middle to high school student. I'm like, okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah. That's interesting. Basically what I'm getting to is, I feel like, you know, you had sort of alluded to this, but this is a film, I think going into, I was a little, I think that Kubrick is so revered that it's a little bit difficult at times to talk about his films because he's so highly thought of and says so much with everything that he's puts on in each frame that I didn't want to come off as like the, oh yeah, it was fine, you know, kind of a review. Like, I wanted to give it the attention that it deserved, if that makes sense. And so I was
like,
okay.
I agree.
Yeah. And so going into the discussion, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, watch this maybe twice and really kind of dig into it. And, you know, I wasn't able to do that. I saw it the one time. And I got done with it and was a lot more intimidated after I watched it. Because I was like, huh. You know, that was kind of my immediate reaction. Was I was watching it and was just kind of like, I don't know if I am grasping everything that he's trying to say. Because I know that there's more than what is explicitly being said in the film. But I didn't know that it was on the surface as... It wasn't at what I expected it to be. Right. And so some of that's my fault with what I brought to it. And, you know, since looking at, you know, different reviews and different reflectives or retrospectives that you have sent me and reading those different articles and that sort of thing, like, I definitely gained a deeper appreciation for the film. And, you know, a peek behind the curtain, we were originally going to do this yesterday, and I was glad that I had another day to kind of sit with it and to think about it.
Yeah, it definitely needs space. I think a lot of his films, like 2001 and The Shining, well, maybe not so much The Shining. That one sticks with you, I think. There's visual cues and things in that one that will never leave my head, you know. And there's stuff in this movie that kind of was similar. Actually, some of my favorite parts sort of mimicked The Shining. And we can get into that eventually. But yeah, this one definitely I felt like with the themes and the thoughts of, like, you know, what I'm bringing to this movie right now and my thoughts about marriage and fidelity and all the different themes of sexual tension throughout it. Like, yeah. Actually, I knew going in it was going to be, I was going to be nervous because of the obsessive, eccentric director, and how you approach one of his movies. It's one of those that you really have to take more than once almost to kind of get a full understanding on your own. I mean, what I ended up doing was watching the film all the way through, and then don't try this at home, kids, but I looked up clips while I was at work on YouTube and stuff like that to look at certain ways in which things were shot and, like, how a lot of his main themes that runs all throughout his work, in particular, removing humanity from a situation.
Yeah.
Was prevalent to this film, much like, or removing control or removing, like, your human ability, like your ability to make a decision in some ways, was removed, in this film. But also I can see that very much, in the losing of, Jack Torrance's mind in The Shining, or, what I've heard about, the removal of humanity in A Clockwork Orange. Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff like that. Your ability that your control is taken away from you. Something that you thought was once in control, suddenly you lose it. You lose that humanity, that bit becomes quite a bit more robotic.
Well, what's interesting about that is I think about that in terms of this film with how you cast Tom Cruise, who is, if not charismatic. Would be the way that I would describe Tom Cruise. Like, I don't necessarily think of him as like a tremendous actor. He's a movie star, right?
Yeah.
But he's very,
especially at this point.
Yeah, but he's very charismatic and very, you know, identifiable, and people want to root for him and that sort of thing. And in this film, they remove all of that. You know, they strip him from having charisma with his character, because his character of Bill is not, he's not a particularly likable guy. He's not a really, really like an honorable person. He is flawed and he is, sort of personalityless. Like, he's pretty bland and everything. He's just being led around by his imagination and his sexual curiosity, but he's not necessarily that much of a character that I'm used to seeing him play. And
that's true.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think that that's fine. I think that that's interesting. I know that, you know, this doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the film, but I know that the reviews of the film were pretty hard on Tom Cruise in general because they were saying how bland he was. But I think that that's the point. I think he's supposed to be like that. And then this is interesting, and I want to hear what you think about this, is that I also feel like this film is made out to be this erotic thriller. And I don't really think that it's that erotic, and it's sort of a thriller, but not really. Because it has scenes of sex and it has nudity, but it's not necessarily titillating, I didn't think.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say that.
And so I found myself watching it and kind of confronting my own expectations of the film again and being like, well, wait a minute, I thought this was like Kubrick does erotic thriller. And then, you know, when you're done, you're like, oh, it was him doing it. He's just not playing within those genres or that specific of a type of film. Like it's his version to where it's slower paced, it's more cerebral, it's more about the consequences of your actions and, you know, the people you trust and the things you do and the things you say and all of that kind of thing. It's not about, oh, this hot person's going to bang the main actor. You know,
and it almost never happens. It almost always gets snatched away.
Yeah. Well, and the only time that it does happen is in his imagination on what Cole Kidman's doing.
Correct. Yeah. That there's that moment where he keeps thinking about it. I have a theory about that. I'll come back to that.
Sure.
There's a bunch of different theories that you could say about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, to kind of go off of what you were saying, it's not quite, it's the movie uses sex and it has themes of sexual tension. But it never is quite sexy in a way that like you said, titillating, but almost to the point where they're covering up a lot of the different part. Like they'll show Nicole Kidman, you know, taking off her gown in the first scene, and that's supposed to just bring you right into the movie. But by the time that you reach the secret society orgy that's happening in like the crazy mansion, like a lot of that stuff's getting covered up. And the movie never shies away from showing this like female form over and over again. You could show the full frontal of these women walking around and stuff like that in a seductive kind of way, but never in an act of like, it's always some form of unsettlingness.
Yes.
Underneath it all.
Mm-hmm.
There's this feeling of like just a cold, dark, desire, but like, oh gosh, like this feeling of like dread at the same time, this panic that must be going through Tom Cruise's character. Maybe not, but, it kind of counteracts my theory, but at the same time, it's going through my head. And the other thing that about this film that the themes are all throughout is this anticipation.
Mm.
Anticipation in sex, there's a bit of anticipation. Sometimes in sex, this sounds so stupid because I'm explaining sex to all your listeners, but like there's this anticipation of reaching a certain goal sometimes or drawing it out in like in a foreplay kind of manner. Whereas in this film, the way they talk, the way they move, the way the scenes move, it's nice and slow and deliberate and like much like Kubrick is moving across your mind in a way with these scenes. And the characters like to talk with pauses and it's so annoying at first.
Yeah, sure.
But then I realize why. Well, in my head, I kind of figured after seeing it, I'm like, what the hell is happening? But I guess that choice of him having those takes over and over again, and I know you read the, what is it? Is it the Hollywood Reporter or I forget which article?
I thought it was from Variety maybe.
Variety. Okay. one of the recent articles was like a retrospective.
Yeah, on, the 15 years later.
Yeah, and it was just last week, wasn't it? The 16th or two weeks ago or something like that?
I believe so.
July 16th, 1999. In the article, they talk about how, Kubrick would, I mean, I knew this from when I heard about and watched the making of, The Shining, but he would put his actors through the ringer just all over the place, doing at least 95 takes, and obviously only being able to choose one, so he's like, kind of messing, like, you know, almost mind fucking his actors. And in a way, him being able to tell his story in his final edit, able to do the same to his audience. Mm. And I think that anticipation, like the entire scene of him, actually I would start it all the way from, when he leaves, when he first meets the woman, whose father had just passed away in bed.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She professes her love for Dr. Bill, and even tries to kiss him, in the room with her over top of her,
father's dead corpse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was insane. All these people throwing, but I think from that point all the way until, the club where Nick Nightingale is playing, his buddy from when he went to med school, who dropped out and became a piano player. He's like that turning point at which the mystery begins. At first, you know, I'm sitting there wondering, like, why is everyone just throwing themselves at Dr. Bill? But eventually that mystery turns into, ooh, like now there's going to be this party. And I actually remember the scene of the party and from when I was, younger watching it and stuff like that. And remembering some of the more, like frightening imagery with some of those Venetian masks and that amazing shot of Cruz's character looking up at the balcony. Mm-hmm. At one of the, probably one of the higher ups of some sort of secret organization with this, I forget what kind of hat it is, but it's this really, it looks like the hat from, the Marquee, the comic. And like that really crazy, like bird-like mask.
Oh, right, right, yes.
Those parts, my phone dropped. Those parts, add to, like that tension, that drawing out and that entire circle of women, you watch each one of them go to a particular man almost. I think they might go through each, at least it felt like it. Those scenes just drag out and all of the dialogue and all of that. I think that all, swirls into this big, overall vision Kubrick had of enticing you through a mystery, seductively, all the way through this thriller. I, whether or not, you or I would consider it erotic, it uses sex, so I guess that counts. I don't know. Question mark. You know, I don't know. It's like, it's one of those, like, I don't pretend to even be able to be qualified to know what genre is what genre, but I do think it qualifies as a thriller. Simply for the fact that you have that, like, I had this constant want throughout the entire thing. I wanted answers. I mean, are we going to find out what this is? Are we going to find out what happens to him? Are we going to find out if he gets caught or something? You know, it's kind of a dirty, scary, and fun, part of the film. I mean, everyone can guess now what my favorite part of film was. So.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of mysteries in there that are left kind of to the interpretation.
Absolutely.
Of the audience, which is always a good time. So, you know, some of the things that I had written down here that I wanted to make sure and mention was, first of all, I thought the film had an interesting feeling to it where it didn't feel like it was modern to me. Like I was watching it and it didn't feel like I was watching a film, filmed and set in the late 90s. And I don't know exactly what era I would have placed it in, but it just seemed like it was shot in a way that made it have more of an aged, I guess, feel to it, I guess. And I don't know what it was in particular. I think it was around the beginning Christmas ball, and they're, you know, dancing around. And that just came off as dated in a good way to me. And I did like that. It just felt, I guess it felt like I was comfortable, like I was in good hands, and it was safe, and, you know, just coaxing me into the film.
That lighting.
Yeah.
That really warm lighting at the Christmas. You're right. He lights that scene so warmly and so, like, you just feel like, yeah. And what do you think about setting it at Christmas? I kept seeing Christmas over and over again. I kept thinking it was past Christmas or Christmas Eve or something like that. Like, you know, the way that this movie was set, like, you would think that it was a couple days before or something like that.
Yeah, it was around the Christmas time. I think what I like about it, I think it was a smart choice, and I think that, you know, you and I can get into this when we get a little bit more into our personal feelings on it, I guess. But what I liked about it was Christmas is a time for family, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a time where everyone typically gets together, and you're spending time with your loved ones, and the film is about if this couple is going to cast that aside and give in to these sexual desires that they have. And so I think that that's just a nice contrast to what time of year it is. Because if it's just like the hot middle of the summer, I don't know that that setting says anything or means anything. I think if it's around Christmas and it's a time traditionally thought of as being family time where, you know, you're celebrating together, I think that that at least says something a little bit more.
That's a very good point. You notice how the husband and wife, they really, Bill and Alice are never fully, like, interested in each other.
Yeah, I do like that. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Or their daughter, I should point out.
Yes.
They don't really care about, it would seem they don't really mind their kid very much. Even when those shots of her at home, kind of doing her housewife stuff, like, you know, eating cereal or watching TV or something like that and cleaning, never feel like she's concentrated on what her daughter's doing. Or when they're together, the only time I can think of when they are intimate is when they're in front of a mirror.
Mm.
And she's being kissed on the neck and around, like, her shoulder and stuff like that by Tom Cruise. I don't think his head's seen very much. She's not paying attention to him at all. She is looking at herself. And I would guess that she's thinking of that sailor man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that would make sense. But eventually it is revealed after the party that she, a year ago when they were at Cape Cod, she had, aspirations, or at least in her mind, to be with this man.
Yeah, now that's a really interesting monologue she has. It's essentially a monologue to where she's telling this story. And I was really taken with that section. And at the time I didn't realize how important it was going to be to the rest of the film. But I was like, wow, like this is straight, you know, from the gut. Cause it's not really from the heart. I would say from the heart, you're a little bit softer with the things that you say. But she's okay. Basically like, no, I wanted to fuck this guy.
Yeah. You know? She wasn't, it was brutal honesty.
Yeah. It was completely uncensored.
But of course, why I'm like sitting there slapping my knee and going, what? And like, come on. And like, is watching Cruise's reaction or Bill's reaction. And I have to imagine Kubrick telling him, okay, don't react so much. Okay. Act colder. Act like it doesn't bother you. Hold it back. Hold it. You know, it's just like, you know, or is that a choice? I mean, is that a choice? I would imagine that's like a directorial choice. for him to be that way. You know, he doesn't explode. He doesn't get angry. He doesn't question her, really, even about the whole thing. You know, he doesn't plead with her, which leads me to believe to my theory. And would you like to hear my theory?
Oh, absolutely, please.
My theory is that this is all a play. This whole thing between the two of them is some sort of weird sexual dynamic deviancy that they put on for each other that is ongoing throughout their life.
Hmm.
They just do this. Like, they just put this, like whether or not that sailor is a reality, right? Whether or not that really happened, it could be just a story his wife tells to her husband to titillate him. He's off on his journey later on, and it keeps cutting back to him thinking about it.
Yes.
To him, like, he's like,
rocks him.
He's practically melting at the idea in his shots of his face of, in my perception, of this man all over his wife. And, she does this, like, it might be because she's drunk, it might be because she's putting on an American accent, being an Australian actress, but she is like overacting almost in some ways, kind of trying to get something, like she's talking like this, and she's telling him, you don't even know, like you don't even know what I'm capable of.
Yeah, you don't know me.
You don't know me, yeah. And like, I almost would believe that he went off to this, masked orgy at the mansion, and she was probably one of the women in the masks off somewhere in another room somewhere.
It wouldn't surprise me. And you know, he definitely did that because of the story that she told him.
Yeah,
right.
Oh,
like,
that was the reason why he went off that night.
Yeah, I don't think he would have gone, because you know what's interesting is at the beginning she's tempted by this older man. He's tempted by these two models, and they're both tempted, and they can both clearly do whatever they wanted, but they don't. And I'm like, oh, okay, well that's interesting, because they don't come across as overly wholesome. Like, that doesn't seem like something that's out of either one of their character to do something like that, to cheat on their spouse, but they choose not to, and I found that to be interesting. But as soon as she tells him that, oh, you know, I had this fantasy and I wanted to do this with this sailor, it's almost like an ego thing for him where he has to do more. He has to almost do more than what she almost did or thought of doing.
I see.
So he goes and seeks out.
It's almost like an arms race. Almost.
Yeah, he goes
trying
and seeks
to
out
outdo each other.
Yeah, he seeks out more of a risk than what she had been thinking of.
Do you think that when they, with my theory too, like they went to that Christmas party at the very beginning,
yeah,
trying to outdo each other. She's sitting there dancing with that gentleman, and she looks over and she sees him with two of these models.
Yes.
And she's like, oh, like she gets this kind of feeling like I'm losing, and that's why she turns to this man and goes, well, I don't think I'm gonna go upstairs because I'm married. Like,
uh-huh.
She's like drunk and like kind of playing it up.
Yeah, she, you know, that's how Kidman's not like that in any other scene. And she was, like, I was really struck by that in that she was really big. It was a really big performance right there. And I didn't know, you know, if that was a lot of, you know, you look at all these performances and they're obviously the choice that was made since there were so many takes, and you know, this film was shot for so long, for 400 days, you know, which is just unbelievable. So you know that it's not like, oh, this is, we didn't have any coverage. This is the only shot we had. So we got to use this take. There's takes to be had. There's other performances to be had, and he chose these. So, you know, with her being a little bit different than how she is in the rest of the film, I wonder if that is because, like you were saying, she's trying to win in this little sexual mind game against Bill, or if she is really just happens to be very drunk. You know, I would think that it's more the former, because I think that if she's just drunk, it doesn't have as much depth. And I don't know that Kubrick's interested in that.
Just about every scene, too, someone's throwing it at Dr. Bill.
Yeah.
They are, it's the only time I can think of when they don't is, when he's walking down the street after being tailed and he, comes across a group of men who sling out,
the homophobic guys, yeah.
Guys, and they're all calling him all sorts of horrible names and stuff like that. But still, there's someone who is after him in some capacity, even during that time. You know, he meets the prostitute, and just off a whim, she's just like, "Hey, you want to go someplace?" and stuff like that. And he's just, "Yeah, all right."
Yeah, he goes with her much easier than I expected him to.
Well, and see, I think that's part of a. There must be some sort of game, like even this enormous, elaborate. Mansion. I know it seems kind of ridiculous. Maybe it's a far-flung, half-baked idea, but like, what if this was a one huge play? I mean, like, this woman who, well, maybe not, because I guess she dies or she doesn't die.
Well,
she doesn't die.
She ends up.
She is, yeah.
Spoilers, she ends up dead.
Oh, does she?
The hooker?
Yeah.
Because she's the woman that sacrifices herself.
She's the prostitute, but also they said she was
HIV positive. Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's left ambiguous as to if she is killed by this secret group, or if she actually ODs, or what because they tell him that she ODs.
Oh, that's right. Okay. They told him, cover all that up.
Yeah, and they told him that Nick just went to Seattle to see his family. But he found out that, you know, Nick looked like he had been beaten up.
Yeah. Alan Cummings is there right there in the, and he is just, staring him down too, like a piece of meat.
Sure.
Tom Cruise.
You know, what's interesting about the actors that he has in here, Alan Cummings, you know, he's a nice character actor. I always like seeing him in things. But they have Sidney Pollack, the director, and then they also have Todd Field, who Todd Fields did In the Bedroom and Little Children, which are two very Kubrick-like films.
Yeah.
They very have that deliberate, same very languished. Very languid, yeah.
They work well. They're like, they're kind of like double feature with this film.
Triple feature. They very much are, yeah.
They would fit really well with this type. Gosh, I'm lost. I'm all over the place.
No, that's fine. You know, I want to stick with him and meeting the prostitute is what I liked about that is, you know, before I thought of what you had mentioned with this all being a game, like a sexual game. Before I thought of that, I was like, well, I liked how he, and this can still work with that theory, is that he goes along with her and is like, oh yeah, I'm ready to do this. I'm going to step out on my wife. And then he gets there and he kind of, like, it's awkward then. It's an awkward conversation between them. He's like, so I guess we should talk about money or is that kind of how it goes? You know, and then his wife calls and it's just kind of an awkward situation. And so I thought that was really interesting because it seems like for all of his curiosity, he may be more drawn to it intellectually than physically. Like maybe he just wants to know about this, but isn't actually ready to do anything about it.
He'd rather have the idea of stepping out on his wife than actually stepping out on his wife.
Yeah. It's like reality hits him before he's actually ready for it.
Yeah.
So that, I thought that was interesting.
He's such a weird choice almost. And like a lot of the directorial choices of takes and a lot of his acting choices and stuff like that. I don't see, that's the thing about that article that was so interesting was, for having him be on this project for so long and doing so many takes and stuff like that, that scene that you're talking about, him with the prostitute talking about whether or not he should give him money, is so bizarre in terms of like, in terms of plot and story, like what is he doing and the actions don't make any sense.
Mm.
To kind of go along with it. But I guess, yeah, you're right. He's more interested in going further and further out and seeing how far he can go. And actually, when he goes to the costume shop much later, when he finally talks to Nick Nightingale and he needs to get a cloak and a Venetian mask, and he relies on this rainbow shop owner, which I'm not sure what rainbow necessarily means. They kept seeing that pop up too.
Mm-hmm.
There was a shop named Rainbow and stuff. You kept seeing it on the bag and all that. But when you go there into the shop, he's talking to the owner, and they're looking at all these different cloaks, and they're talking about what they should be wearing. And then they hear a noise.
Mm.
And they go in the back, and they interrupt this weird, like, threesome, possibly foursome, and the reason why I say possibly foursome is because I don't think that that's his daughter. I think even that's all a sexual play.
Really?
Think they're all four of them are sexual deviants hanging out in their shop at night. And when they have someone knock on the door, they're still, quote, in character. What are you doing with my daughter? You are such a whore. What are you doing? How would you be that way? And stuff like that. And like, I think that they're still going on, because even when her father's there, she has no shame. She walks over to Tom Cruise, walks over to Bill, whispers something, you don't hear it in his ear, and then just kind of gives him like this like stare down. And she walks away out of the scene, and Tom looks a little shocked at what's going on. I mean, that's just my takeaway. Right? It's not really relevant, but it's another one of those. It's not really relevant to the overall scale of the film. But it would be just another brick in this giant wall of sexual deviant themed. Like, let's see how strange and weird we can make it.
Yeah.
And I was almost kind of disappointed, when you go to the orgy, towards the latter half of the film, that there really isn't, I mean, it looks creepy. It looks dark. It looks, foreboding, but never was it, titillating or even honestly strange, other than all of them wearing these Venetian masks.
You know, I thought that same thing. I was expecting, you know, because this film has a lot of baggage for me associated with it just because of what I've heard about it. And oh, you'll never believe this whole
they go to this thing.
Even Nicky
Nightingale is sitting there going, these women, they do the strangest things.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. He says that in the club.
Wow, am I that deprived to where I see this and I'm like, and?
We might have hit on it. We're two red-blooded American males sitting here talking about what we've seen in a movie in 1999, which was, quote, erotic.
Mm-hmm.
What we would consider erotic now, or titillating or whatever, might have been ruined, I'll say it, by internet porn.
There you go.
It's real. It's probably just smashed. Like, they took this movie and just broke its back. Like, I don't think so. Like, you know? But honestly, I think that you see, for as much female nudity that you see in this film, like, it's certainly starting to change. You're certainly starting to see a shift. This kind of gets off topic with another film, but it kind of relates in terms of nudity. But Under the Skin, I just saw last night,
and
I rented it from Redbox.
I have yet to see that. I'm actually doing a show on that fairly soon.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. So when you do, you may notice that there is more male nudity in it than female nudity. Spoiler alert.
Interesting.
But the thing is, I'm talking full frontal male nudity in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that shift is everyone's starting to finally be kind of okay with that. You know, it doesn't turn into just this, like, almost disgusting, exploitation of mm-hmm. Women. It's more of like, there's a purpose to it. There's a reason why we're showing it. I don't think the exploitation was happening too much in this film, because I don't think I think Kubrick always has something to say, when there's nudity in the film, like even with the opening shot of Nicole Kidman, like he is setting up the stage and stuff like that.
Sure.
But in a lot of nudity in films, they do get to be a little gratuitous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Eyes Wide Shut is, there was a lot of talk with the ratings of this film, whether or not it should be NC-17 or not. At the time it was coming out in 99, the landscape for these kinds of films just didn't exist. And in a way, it was kind of a pioneer in that way, to be able to open up kind of a path, for other films that, much like Under the Skin, that you wouldn't be able to show. I mean, it's a rated R film, but, you know, it's, or I don't know, actually, I don't know what Under the Skin is, but, well, I guess I would have heard if it was unrated, but
sure.
NC-17.
I think that that's funny because, you know, graduating high school in 98, like, I hear about a movie coming out in 99 and I think, oh, well, that's not that long ago. You know, that's not that far removed. And I think, you know, oh, wow, actually I graduated, you know, high school 16 years ago. And I'm like, oh, geez, you know, that's way older than I think it is.
But a long way.
Yeah, that's a long ways away. And so I think about when it came out and I'm like, oh, no, you know, the world was a completely different. It's just the same as it was now. You know, and I think about it in that way. If it would have came out in, you know, say I was, you know, your age, Ben, or something, and you think about the late 90s, and you're like, oh, I was in middle school or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't imagine seeing a film like this in the theaters, you know, to where I'm like, oh, okay, well, yeah, sure. I was going into college. I would see this. You know, and it would be no big deal. The things that were shown. I think that,
was opening.
Sure. I think that the, you know, what ruined me wasn't the internet. It was, your trip to Quimby's and your purchase that you shared with me. That's what ruined everything for me. I'm no longer shocked. Thanks to you and Will. And
that's
and
why you picked me for this film. That all makes sense now.
And what we're talking about is, I don't remember the artist's name, but it is called Sad Sex, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Which is an interesting work.
That's a very good point. Like, I guess, you know, Eyes Wide Shut must have been the start of it. You know, growing up I don't mind getting personal, so we can do that, whatever.
Sure.
Growing up in like a Catholic household where something like Eyes Wide Shut would have never ever came across our television.
Mm.
But, you know, we're allowed to stay up till, you know, middle school, let's say midnight, 2 o'clock or whatever. As long as we're in our rooms or we're in the house or something like that, we're not driving around but running around town or anything like that. You know, we were able to sit in the house and watch TV and sure enough, this stuff comes on.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I had no idea who Kubrick was at the time. You know, middle schooler, probably not, and nothing to do with it. But I do definitely remember seeing parts of this film and understanding who Nicole Kidman was, mostly because of Batman Forever, but definitely knowing who Tom Cruise was. And I guess maybe I knew they were married. I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not I knew anything about that, but the interesting dynamic of them being married and having a plot like this or a ground, like, you know, to me, marriage was between a man and a woman and nothing else, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, and it could never be as, flirtatious or playful as these characters could be.
Right.
Yeah, it was taboo. You just never spoke about this. So I guess maybe back in the day, maybe it could have been shocking to me. I think I remember it being that way. But having since seen it, I think that's a great observation that it's just not anymore. And I definitely don't feel that way anymore. You know,
yeah.
There was a scene of one masked man completely nude. Mm. You see a side shot of him to show that he is not wearing any clothing. Dancing with another man on the dance floor as mm-hmm. Tom walks through, or as Dr. Bill, I guess, walks through in his mask and stuff like that. And I don't remember that when I was younger, but I definitely didn't bat an eye at it today. So I can sit there and see that and go, okay, yeah.
Sure. It's just, it's a place where anything goes.
Mm. Sure.
And that's why I kind of was surprised that for an anything goes, it was I mean, except, I mean, obviously minus the mask, it was fairly traditional, I thought.
And why do you think Venetian mask? I have a theory on that too.
You know, I don't know. I thought that, isn't it, I believe it's because of, that was, synonymous with sex. Isn't that what it is? That culture.
That culture, sorta. I think, when I had a, see, I kind of regret not buying one because I went in 2008, I think, to Venice, and they had, like, all these masks and stuff like that around. And I remember these were coming out at a time when, it was, that culture at the time these were coming out, it was predominantly Catholic, which ties into my personal story I'm telling.
Sure.
And once again, Catholic, and like, especially in the Elizabethan era and stuff like that, was very, what is it? Like, I think of, when I think of Elizabethan, I think of like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And how,
oh, very, buttoned up, very.
Yes, exactly.
Neat and tidy and.
Well, and very strained sexually. Like, mm-hmm. And it works, I swear to God, perfectly with the film. Cause it's just this sexual frustration that you're feeling this entire time, this anticipation and then a quick stop. You know, Dr. Bill's about to have sex with a prostitute and then ultimately stops because of the telephone call, or ultimately stops because the husband comes home.
Yeah.
You know,
or later he's calling to see, you know, the woman that professes his love, her love to him. He goes and calls on her to see if she's still up for it, and he gets her husband on the phone.
Or even his fellow doctor stopping him before he goes up and has, some fun time with the two ladies, gets called up at the Christmas party or something.
Yeah.
There's always this, like, let's just drag him along and then stop it, and drag him along and then stop it. And then ultimately, the final scene of the film, you know, when they finally do have this kind of heart to heart or this breakdown or something like that of their own, marriage after he comes back from,
yes,
from the party and he finds out about his near, run in with, he could have been HIV positive, at a certain point. He spills the beans to his wife.
Yeah. Now, okay. Before we go any further on that, I want to see what you think of, well, first of all, I guess we should, you know, you had mentioned this earlier, but, Fidelio is the password.
Yeah.
Which is Latin and it means faithful.
Fidelity.
Which I thought was interesting, you know, yeah, for Fidelio.
So interesting, yeah. Of course it is.
Of course. But what I think is also really interesting is we get to the end, you know, he's been warned, he goes back to the house, you know, they warn him to stay away and to quit asking these questions. We find out, about the woman that had saved him, who was the prostitute. And we find out kind of what happened to her. And, you know, like we mentioned, Nick gets sent away. And then we have, the mask on his bed next to his wife.
Ooh, yes.
And what is it that you took from that? Because it could be that he forgot it and just happened to forget it on his bed next to his wife. Or it could be that she found it and put it there to say, hey, look, I know something's, like, what is this? Like, I know something's going on. Or what did you make of it being there? Or it could have been someone broke in and put it there. As in, like, we can get to your family.
Oh, the secret society kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what? That's a very good point. I didn't think about that. You know what? The thought kept popping up in my head. Do you think it all, I mean, I'm answering your question with a question, but like, do you think it's all possible that this may be all a big play with him and his wife?
Yeah, I think that could be. I think it very much, you know, he could have used this society as something that he genuinely didn't know about, but that he just kept pushing the boundaries and they had kind of, you know, potentially had some sort of agreement to where.
I really like that theory of maybe like one of the, yeah, I really like that theory of the secret society breaking in, that feeling of like, we can get to you however you think, but also I think it's more likely that he wakes her up right then and there and cries and tells her, you know, tells her all about, you know, his confession, pretty much, that, right. of his potential infidelity that he was going to have in his mind and stuff like that. They both have very different confessionals, because hers is like, oh yeah, well, I've had this in my back pocket this whole time.
And it's so calm.
Yeah.
She's just telling him, you know what? I almost did this. I thought about it. I wanted to do it, but I didn't do it. And when he tells her, he's losing it. You know, he's crying and mess and ashamed of himself. And it all, you know, a lot of it stems back to that opening conversation to where he's talking about how, you know, women are, or men are, let me start again. Where women are more faithful, generally. And she says, oh, really? Well, did you know that I wanted to do, you know, this? And so she is like the more traditionally male, like calm, straightforward, explaining it to him, to where at the end he's much more emotional and vulnerable and hurt and, you know, thinking about what he could have lost when he's explaining it to her, or about to explain it to her. So it's almost a reversal of roles, which I think is kind of interesting.
I like that too. It's one of those that, you know, it breaks down stereotypes that you would normally think. That's why I still think it's kind of a pioneer in that kind of way, in terms of gender reversal as well, in some aspects. Maybe not all.
Yeah, I think so. So I don't know. Like, I don't know which one of those I go for. I tend to think, for me, for my own interpretation, I think that she found it and put it there.
Okay.
And I think that it's kind of like a, look, I know what you did, but I want to hear you tell me what you did.
Yeah, because what's her reaction again?
You know, I want to say, I don't think...
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, I don't think we see a lot of him pouring it all out, if my memory serves. Like, I think that he's all a mess about to tell her what happened. You know, like, he doesn't say, oh, and then I went here, and then I saw Nick, and then I did this, and then I saw this hooker. You know, he doesn't, like, go through the entire story that we just watched. And then I was at this place, and there's all these naked people, and there's these Venetian masks. Like, I don't think that he does that. I think he's getting ready to tell her, and then it cuts to the final scene. If my memory serves me. I could be completely wrong.
Okay. Because, like, yeah, it once again, it's another one of those, like,
they tease it out. They tease out the reveal of what he's about, what he almost did. And then
but what he almost did, but like, what's her, but also like, what her reaction is.
Well, her reaction, her reaction's the next scene. And what I thought is what made this film good to great for me. And, you know, the next scene is just a normal day, it seems like. They seem like they're
actually
fine.
With their daughter.
Yeah, they're actually spending time with their daughter. And, you know, he says something just as plain as, what do you think we should do? And, you know, they end the movie with her saying, fuck.
It's like, oh, it's easy. This.
Yeah.
And
I think that's so interesting, because it's like, they go through all of this. She's heard all these stories, and you can read that maybe she was into that. Maybe she was like, ooh, I'm glad you almost did all these things, but you didn't. You know, and that could be like a turn on for her. Or, you know, like you were saying about her looking into the mirror and thinking about the sailor and, thinking about this, you know, society that he almost was a part of. And, you know, I think it's very perfectly valid that she could have been one of those people. We don't know that. You know, we don't know that she's not. We don't see what she's doing during those times, really. We're given the implication that she's asleep, but we don't know, because when he goes home, she's sleeping. But yeah, so I don't know. You know, and she has that crazy dream where she had been sleeping with all of these other men, and that he saw,
that was another clue.
Yeah, that he was watching. Yeah, that he was watching her, and she was laughing about it. Yeah, so it
that was
just
another clue, I think. That was another clue that I thought that she was at the party, or that she had something to do with a lot of this stuff, with him getting caught, or with him, you know, doing all this stuff. Like, I thought this all was a big play. but then somehow, like, maybe not, you know, because you have the scene at the billiard table with the other doctor, who's revealing, oh, you know what, actually, man, there wasn't a second, password, and, you know, this woman died, you know, overdose and stuff like that, like, almost like he wasn't expecting that part.
Yeah, that was interesting, and that was the scene that, or that's the character that, Sidney Pollack is playing that was, Harvey Keitel.
Oh, really?
Character.
Oh, that's right. See, yeah. I read that in the article. That's
yeah,
right.
And he couldn't handle the schedule and the schedule of it all, so he bowed out, and then they had to do all the reshoots of all of those scenes with Sidney Pollack there instead of Harvey Keitel.
Which extended it out
even farther. So, yeah, I mean, it's, boy, you know, it's one of those where we could talk forever about it, and I don't know. Like, I really like that theory, actually, Ben. I don't know that that's something that I would have really come up with.
I just took it more at face value, I think.
I just took it so much more at face value, which I think is a big mistake when it comes to Kubrick.
There's always so many layers.
Yeah.
I do like that ending, though. I do like the way that it, once again, teases, oh, okay, well, now they're back on track. Things are better. Or are they? Like,
yeah.
You know, and then pop. Boom, it's done. You know, she makes the suggestion. You could go so many different roads with it, but they're not going to show you. They're not going to show you where they're going to go. They're not going to fully penetrate this idea and be able to get there and tell you. They'd rather just leave it ambiguous just so, we can, take it to our graves along with Stanley. You know, it's just like we kind of will never know.
Well, I like that. I loved the way that she said it. Like, I loved that line reading. Cause it wasn't like, it was, oh, I don't know. I must have seen it a couple of times, but she says it in a way, she says the word fuck in a way where it's not, you know, it's not quite matter of fact. It's not like, oh, of course, this is what we should do. It's got a little bit of flirtation in there. And what it makes me think of is it makes me think that she knows exactly who her husband is. She knows that after this, this is what it's going to take for them to be okay. You know, it's like, oh, you went through all of this. You had all of these different desires sort of splayed out in front of you. Well, let's go work that out. You know?
That's a very good point. Like, and that's kind of my first reaction to it, I think, was, you know, she said, you know, the answer's been lying in front of us this whole time. You know, it's each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what brought them both back is they decided to, you know what, let's just make this work. Let's make this happen. So.
And yeah. even if it's, exactly what your theory was saying, that this is just a whole game the two of them are playing, that this is like a, okay, game's over, now it's time to sort of complete this whole thing that we've been doing. You know, like
or start again.
Yeah, like the teasing's gone on long enough, let's finish this off, and then we can start anew.
The circle switches all the way back around, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I really like that. I think that's an interesting, that's definitely an interesting way to end the film.
This theory is coming from a 26-year-old about to be married.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you mentioned. Let's talk about that because, like you said, you grew up Catholic, right?
Yes.
I didn't, but I was very heavily into the church growing up. Like, I went 3 times a week. My mother is very religious. My dad is not. And then I married a Catholic who was very religious, right? And then we divorced. You know, I did have people, I had actually more than 2 people, email me in and say, did you get a divorce? Like, I'm sorry for asking you this. but yeah, so, I did get a divorce last year as a recording. from a Catholic. And then what's interesting is you are about to be married. Maybe married by the time this comes out, actually. Maybe not.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it'll be right around.
Happy October 4th.
Okay, I think this is going to be probably September, so I think you're still
good. Oh, okay. All right.
So I won't wish you congratulations yet.
Oh, thanks.
But, so I think that is all, things that we bring into the film. Right? Because I see these two, and they are having these frank conversations, and, you know, it's like, okay, well, they're not having a good conversation, but at least they're having a conversation about an uncomfortable situation, you know, with that.
Fixing something with each other, working sure. together.
Sure. They're, you know, they're choosing to be a team and to work something out, as opposed to worrying about themselves. Right? Because she's like, oh, I wanted to do this thing. I didn't do it, but I'm telling you about it, you know, and he goes through this entire night. But then when he goes home, he's going to tell her about it, whether he, you know, is being completely honest with her during it or not, whether when he's at the prostitute's home, you know, he's like, oh, well, you know, it's taken me longer than I thought. I'll be home.
That's almost the climax quote of the film.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's the final release of his emotion of his.
Yeah.
That's probably the most emotion you see out of either character the entire film.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, outside of probably the fantasies of what his wife would have or wanted or would have done with that guy. I think that, that's probably the most emotion that's shown. Because it's a pretty removed film, really. You know, there's not a lot of dramatic, performance. But, so basically what I'm getting at is I think that, you know, it's important to note where we're both coming from when we view the film.
Yeah.
And what our takes are and that sort of thing. So yeah, so what, do you have anything else, Ben, or what else?
I don't
else,
have any final thoughts, yeah, other than that I need to watch it more, because I finally got it. I watched this, streaming on Amazon, and, it was, you know, a couple bucks or whatever, and then I just thought, you know what, I'm just gonna go and pony up the money for the Blu-ray, and I got it, and it, you know, it wasn't too bad, and, that way I can view it. And I remember in the past, cause I've watched it maybe a week or two ago, and I remember just sticking with me for so long that I ended up telling my fiance about it, just like, you know, just off the cuff, like, and then there was this scene, and
yeah.
there was this, and like, she was following along, you know, cause I tend to think I, you know, try to keep everything in order and tell the story correctly, but, you know, she was so much more intrigued once I was getting to like the mystery part of it all. And mm-hmm. I was like, but that point, I won't spoil it. So it's one of those that I do feel like having, and it might be a good for me to sit down and watch, going into a marriage, finally. I mean, I've been with Samantha for 5.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and we're finally getting married almost by our six year we've been dating. So like, in a way, like, you know, living with her and stuff like that, it's not necessarily marriage, but, it, you know, living together
it's
now
close,
in this kind of society,
sure.
it's pretty close. So, like, knowing what that's like and being able to kind of work things out and communicate with your couple, with your spouse or your partner, being able to get that across and spell out what you want, even sexually, is important.
Yeah.
So, that was the part my mom's not supposed to hear.
I think that you're exactly right. I mean, I watched with Annelle, who, you know, if people haven't figured out by now with all my constant mentionings of her on the shows, you know, she's my girlfriend that I live with.
What? Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoilers.
I'm just kidding.
You know, so we live together in an apartment and you know, we have a little 6-year-old that's running around who's being very good and went to sleep.
That you pay no attention to, and you just go to these weird parties. No, I'm just kidding.
That's right. That is right. We actually have a fancy party we're going to tomorrow, so who knows?
Uh-oh.
I got a Venetian mask here. Maybe I'll throw it on, whatever.
To make me sick.
So I mean, that's kind of our current situation. And she watched this with me, and we watched it all, and it was very late by the time we were done with it. And the next day we were talking about it, and said, well, wait a minute, like, what happened? Like, at the end, like, I wasn't drunk, but it was just, we were so late.
So surreal, especially late at night.
Yeah, it was so late. And we're like, what is it that happened? Like, that's what happened, right? There wasn't like some huge dramatic, like, thing that we forgot about or missed or anything. Like, it was like, no, you know, that's what happened. Like, you know, he broke down, and then she says that they should fuck, and that's the end of it.
There's no, I mean, maybe I'm just suggesting maybe answers are left up to anybody that knows the source material. I would normally say that, because that's how I found out a very specific detail in Under the Skin, was looking at what the source material book said.
Oh, okay.
But Kubrick is one of those, if you know him, likes to read maybe the first 50 pages of the book, slam it shut, throw it aside, and go, all right, let's make a movie. You know, he takes maybe the premise or the concept, and then kind of, The Shining is a great example of him going off into,
So something separate than what the book laid out.
Yeah, he's more interested in his embellishments than he is making a perfect adaptation of a book, which, of course, you know, I'm totally fine with, because I hear the book's great and I love the movie.
So. Wait a minute. So you're telling me that if Stanley Kubrick had made the Watchmen, that it wouldn't have been the same as Zack Snyder's version?
No. Actually, I would totally watch it.
It wouldn't have been shot for shot the same.
Yeah,
or like totally, like Sin City, I guess.
Yeah, I would watch the only reason why I would watch Stanley Kubrick's Watchmen is because it wouldn't be anything like the comic, and it'd be way stranger, and I'd be like, all right.
Yeah, you know, I wish,
just like the comedian, I like it when things get weird. That's what it's one of his lines.
There you go. Can you think about that? I mean, that would be so strange. Like, I would kill for a Stanley Kubrick superhero film, you know, like if he was alive day where that was the films that were being made, just to see his take on it, because, you know, he's got his horror take with The Shining, he's got this erotic thriller take.
It's hard to imagine him in contemporary film now, you know,
because
you were saying how old this film feels.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine a modern day feeling Kubrick, because he kind of ended in 99, one of the greatest, you know, cinematic years in, like, ever, you know, and like all these great releases and stuff like that. But he feels so old Hollywood to me.
Yeah.
Not old Hollywood, I guess, quote, new Hollywood. But this postmodern era that we're in now, in terms of the art that's being made, I can't imagine what kind of film he'd be making. At least now we have like a Francis Ford Coppola film being made, or since 1999 we've seen different auteurs making we've kind of had replacements.
You have guys that were big in the 70s. I mean, like you said, Coppola, Scorsese. Like you've had guys that have sort of adapted their styles a little bit.
And yeah, I've made a modern film.
Mm-hmm.
But no way does any of those ever. It's just much. It's a lot like David Lynch. How we said if we lost David Lynch, which I think we have at this point.
Yeah, we essentially
have. He's not dead, but he's not making films anymore. At least that's what he says. But there's this David Lynch hole in, I think we talked about this last time, where there is kind of a Stanley Kubrick hole that hasn't been quite filled. There are homages to a lot of the things he does, like I said, with Chris Nolan, but never quite reaching his.
Yeah, it's not quite the same.
Ambitiousness. I don't think anyone could get away with the stuff he was getting away with on the set of Eyes Wide Shut.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think that there's people that have adapted his style, like we mentioned Todd Field, and, you know, people should really check out In the Bedroom and Little Children, which I absolutely love both of those. And Little Children, specifically now, having a 6-year-old, I don't know that I should watch because I feel like it may disturb me much more than it already disturbed me before. But yeah. I loved that movie, and it was it might be one of those where I loved it, but I don't need to revisit it. Kind of
yeah,
like
it
a,
is like a one timer.
Yeah, like a Requiem for a Dream or something. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, I enjoyed that, but man, I don't need to step.
You'll never unsee it.
Yeah, and so I think that we have people that have those type of directing styles, but I don't think they have the magic that Kubrick had, to where he's able to take a subject and make it be something that you're not expecting. And that's what I'm really looking forward to seeing this a second and a third time, is being able to watch it, knowing what it is, and just being able to appreciate it for what it is, and just letting it kind of wash over me a little bit more, as opposed to like, oh, what does he mean with this? What is this trying to say? What is this over here? And then also follow the plot. You know, like
I'm
a little
excited
too,
to watch this. Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine. I'm just saying, like, I was a little too, like, clued into trying to analyze it as opposed to just watching it.
Yeah.
You know?
It'll be interesting watching this later on in life, too, as
sure.
maybe an older couple, or who knows, just as an older man, you know, having been married for a long time, you know, having all the things that come with that marriage and all that baggage and stuff like that, revisiting and seeing certain patterns or not in their marriage patterns.
Yeah.
Of,
I mean,
of these
you know,
two weird
wait,
characters.
wait until you're my age, man. I'm so old, you know, wait until you're the same age as me and Zach and
revisit it.
You know, you're, and you, you have a little one running around or whatever and see what you think of it. Because, you know, I don't know how old they're supposed to be. I would imagine they're supposed to be in their mid to late 30s. Cause I think most people that are grown-ups, unless they're distinctly old, they're supposed to be around mid to late 30s or in their early 40s in films. But, you know, I see that and I'm like, okay, that's close to my age. And, you know, I, you know, not legally, but I have a daughter with the 6-year-old. And so it's interesting to see how, okay, well, I can see myself in this family life that I'm watching here. And so that's a different perspective than, you know, someone who's about to be married. You know, it's just a different way to look at things.
All sorts of tensions, not just sexual, are different, you know, and that's kind of what's going to inform me when I watch this later. Sure. I don't think I need to watch it very soon from now. I maybe once in a while may pop it in or log up on YouTube and see the impressive shots of the orgy scenes when he's walking around and stuff like that. Cause I thought that it's almost like a courtyard or this big giant ballroom with all these hooded creatures, you know, of all different mask shapes and stuff, was just so slow and just interesting to take in. And that's kind of my favorite part of that. And I guess that's kind of what my final thought is like, come for that, come for the weird Kubrick stuff, but then come back later for like maybe, you know, when you've made it. Cause I don't know if I'll ever make up my mind about this film.
Yeah.
About what I truly feel about this. Cause there's so many different perspectives and line and ways of sight that you could look into this.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, one of the things that I just thought of about the weirdness or the lack of weirdness or what have you is, you know, like you had mentioned earlier, we've talked about two different David Lynch films, and this didn't have like a disturbing vibe like a David Lynch filming the same scene.
It always felt like it was going to go there though.
It did. And that's what didn't impact me. You know, as I was like, okay, I'm ready for this to get fucking weird. You know, like this is going to get weird David Lynch style. And it didn't. It was more cerebral than that. And I was like, okay, well, what's the reason? Why didn't it go there? Like it did enough to where you're like, okay, well, this is definitely different. Like, why are they having this like quasi religious sexual orgy happening, you know, with all of these people? And it's such a secret society, yada, yada, yada. But then everything is fairly traditional outside of the masks. Like, yeah, there's people having sex in front of other people, but it's not like that's a outrageous thing, really. You know? And so I don't know. I was expecting it to potentially go into a really crazy, surreal way, like maybe a Lynch film or like a David Cronenberg film might do. But it didn't do that, and it chose to be a little bit more reserved, and I think that that's interesting. So, if you are spent, yes. Ben, I am as well. So, if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about specifically for Podshots, you could email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You could follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod, where you could follow me. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have a Facebook page where you could like the show. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. If you like what we do, you could help us out by going over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com, and you can click on the Amazon ad over on the right-hand side of the page. If you click that Amazon box, it takes you to their homepage, and what I would like you to do is bookmark that homepage and use it whenever you purchase anything from Amazon. What it does is it helps us out. It gives us a little bit of your purchase. It doesn't change anything for you at all. It just gives a little less money to Amazon and a little more money to us. So I do want to thank Ben once again for coming on and discussing the film with me. If people wanted to hear more from you, they could check out our previous shows that we alluded to earlier, which were Brick, Blue Velvet, Donnie Darko, Mulholland Drive, and Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh my gosh, I've done 5 now.
Yeah, you're number 6, I believe, is this one, which makes you, I think, second most? Yeah, I think second most for the people that I've had on.
Oh, heck yeah.
But if people wanted to hear more from you in general outside of this show, where could they do so?
Right now, it's all on Twitter or Facebook. It's facebook.com/BenTeed. That's where I'm posting a lot of my updates. And then, of course, Twitter @BenTeed, BenTiEde. I'm also at planning@thewedding.now. No time to do anything else except talk to Eric. <That's> right. Find time for movies. There's always time for movies.
That's right.
So, yeah, I'm kind of busy. So I haven't posted really much any art or any comics or anything like that. But hopefully, after getting married and getting a house and stuff like that, all these big changes coming, I'll have some time to sit down and work on something bigger and better and more movies. And I hope to come back on like just on more episodes, because I'm psyched. I was like psyched tonight. I was psyched last night, and then obviously couldn't do it last night.
Had to bump it, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, no. And this like discovery almost is like one of the greatest parts about doing this kind of stuff.
Oh, so sure. Yeah. It's so nice when either one of us or both of us haven't seen the film. And yeah, it's like it's a revelation of, holy shit, what have I been doing? Why have I not seen this? You know?
So, more please, Eric.
Well, I will do my best. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another co-host and another film.
I feel like crying.